obsessed.
My dog at the moment does this thing, drives me fucking nuts. When she wants to go outside, instead of pouring at the door like a normal dog, she trots around and does like a lap through the lounge room and the kitchen and just goes in circles.
Oh, that's so cute though.
Oh, it gets really annoying because we have hardwood floors, so she's...
Oh, and so she's figuring out the noise you.
Yes, right. Very much.
Oh, they're smart. They can figure you out, I swear.
Yeah. Welcome back. This is the Dead Obsessed Xmas Guessmas Variety Season. My guest today is Amanda. Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
That's me.
So, Amanda, you've got, we'll promo it at the end as well, but you've got two podcasts, don't you?
Yes, because I don't like spare time, apparently.
Fair enough. The first one that I think I saw you on Instagram was called Fuck Me Dead.
Yep.
Which...
It clearly it's an Australian podcast.
Because I was going to say, is the most Australian thing I've ever heard. And most of our listeners are in the US. So for US listeners, I'll just explain. Saying something like, when Australians say, oh, fuck me dead, it's like, holy shit. Or like, oh my God, I can't believe that's happened again. It's very contextual, but it's an expression.
Yeah, you can use it in any situation. Any situation is good to say fuck me dead in. It's fine.
Yeah, yeah. It's my second favorite Australian phrase. The first one would be, I didn't come here to fuck spiders.
Oh, I love that one too. It's so good.
And the other one's called Devil's Margarita, which I just love the name of. So good.
Well, we were like having trouble naming it. And so we're like, let's Google Halloween cocktails. I don't know how we got there, but that's how we got there.
Perfect.
And there was one called Devil's Margarita. I'm like, hell yeah, let's go with that. So
that's great. So you're doing other people have been calling them hometown murders. We call them your city stories because it's, you know, a little bit more relevant to where you are or where you have been. So you're doing your personal city story, right? Or something that's happened around the city. So you're in Melbourne too.
Yes, I am in Melbourne as well.
Yeah.
So I only moved to Melbourne about 2 years ago, so I'm pretty fresh.
Same.
And when we first moved here, we moved to Brunswick, which is where the story takes place today. And we don't live that far from there now, so even now I would still walk past where this happens.
Oh, okay.
So it's very, very weird when I was researching it, going through all the places and the street names, and I'm like, oh, I know exactly where that is. So I think it gives you like more of a personal connection when you can actually relate it to a place that you've laid eyes on rather than just hearing about it in context. Like,
Definitely being like, I know exactly like how everything looks when you tell that story kind of thing. It's the worst, but also like the best in the worst way.
Yeah, exactly. I didn't want to say better because I'm like, it's not good to imagine this, but also it just, I don't know. It makes me understand more, I think, like when you're researching it and you're like, oh yeah, that place.
You're like, holy shit, I know that door. I don't know.
When I looked up the actual spot on like Google Maps, I'm like, I've definitely walked past it before.
Jesus.
And had no idea that that was the exact spot that it happened. So.
Wow. Okay. All right. So, my guests will tell me either their favorite story or something like that. This is really exciting. I think that you should go first.
Oh, I'm a bit nervous.
Well, would you rather close or would you rather open?
No, let's do it. Let's rip the Band-Aid off.
Okay. All right.
I don't know if you guys do this, but I'm probably going to say trigger warning because I am going to talk about rape, which, you know, I understand is triggering for some people. So just be warned, be prepared.
Cool. Trigger warning on this one. And tell me a story. Tell me a story. I'm excited.
Okay. So I have a feeling, especially if you're in Australia, you probably know this story because it was big news and it wasn't that long ago. So I'm going to tell the story of Jill Maher. Don't know if you remember it.
But... I actually don't know this one.
Okay.
And I don't know if it's something that like I just wasn't paying attention to at the time or something like that. But when you like, I don't know, it sounds familiar, but I can't pick it. So I'm excited to figure out if I do know what you're talking about or not.
I have a feeling that you will just because it was such a huge media story at the time. Like I lived in Sydney at the time, so I was a state away and I still heard about it.
All right.
So I just feel like if you're in Australia at the time, probably would have heard it.
Bring it on.
But it's a rough one. It's not good. Obviously, this is true crime. Of course, it's not good.
None of this is good. That's kind of the point.
Yeah, exactly. So Jill Maher was originally from Ireland, but had been living in Australia for quite a long time. She got a citizenship way back in like 94. And I think she'd been living here.
That's the year I was born.
So I think she was 29 at the time. So she'd been here most of her life.
Yeah. What year is it?
So she got her citizenship in 94, but the actual thing I'm about to talk about happens in 2012.
Oh, shit. Okay. All right.
So she'd been here for a long time.
Yeah.
I would say at this point you're a local, like,
oh, yeah.
Place of Australian at that point. Come on.
So it doesn't take long.
Yeah, it doesn't. She had moved to Melbourne in 2009, and at the time she was living in Brunswick with her husband, Tom. Now, I want to point out, like, straight up, that they were happily married. There was no issues in their relationship. They were thinking about buying a house and starting a family and all that good stuff, because, you know, people always suspect the husband. It's the husband, right?
I don't know if you're foreshadowing or not. Is it actually the husband?
Spoiler, it wasn't, which is why I'm saying
okay,
that straight away.
Yay. I thought you were trying to trick me. I didn't want to fall for it.
Because I just feel like every time something happens, it's the husband.
I think there's a merch store somewhere. Murder apparel?
I've seen those shirts. Yeah, I've seen
the husband in it?
Yeah.
I'm going to wear that on our anniversary, me and my husband.
That's why for this one, I'm going to say straight up that they were happily married because it was not him. It was
good. Okay.
One of the outliers. It wasn't the husband.
Okay. That's good to know.
So she was working for the ABC in the city, and on Friday the 21st of September in 2012, she went out for drinks after work, which I feel like is a very normal thing to do on a Friday.
Yeah, it wasn't until this year anyway. Yep.
Good point. Haven't done that in a long time.
Yeah, I haven't been outside in a while.
Same. So at about 9 p.m., her and three of her coworkers decided that they wanted to go closer to home. They wanted to finish out their night with more drinks in Brunswick. So they went to the Brunswick Green Hotel on Sydney Road, and they finished up there at about 1, but they still decided they wanted to go for just one last drink, which, like, go
that's
them.
Hell yeah. I was just thinking about that, yeah. And I was like, that's so late for me.
Yeah. So they go for one final drink at a bar called Bar Etiquette. Which is only about 900 meters from where Jill lived.
That's handy.
The bar has since shut down. And when I read that, I'm like, I wonder if it has to do with the pub, like the media coverage around that being the last place that she was.
Did it say when it closed down?
No, I couldn't find that on Google, but I have to wonder.
Yeah.
There's another bar there now and it looks completely different. So maybe they're just trying to distance themselves.
Yeah, probably.
You wouldn't want your business to be associated with something like this.
No. It's like going to the Claremont Hotel. They sort of lent into it a little bit with the Claremont serial killer because that's where all the victims last went. But they've got these beautiful in memoriam pictures on the wall of them, which is
that's
a really,
really
nice
cool.
way to sort of do it. Yeah.
Okay. So after they'd finished their final drink at about 1:30, a co-worker did offer to walk Jill home because it wasn't far, but she declined for the same reason. It's like a 10-minute walk. It's down a busy main street.
Yeah.
I mean, I have to admit that I personally would have done the same. I would have assumed it would have
been
fine.
A lot of people would. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm sure I've done this before. So I don't think it's too odd that she said no.
I have massive anxiety. I definitely wouldn't have. But I'm also lazy. I would have gotten an Uber.
There's a part of me that's like, oh no, I'd totally do that. But now that I do true crime so much, I'm like, maybe not now. Maybe
I think,
a bit too paranoid.
I think my laziness has saved me probably more than once because I will always catch an Uber or like just do and never walk anywhere.
I mean, that's a good thing though, because you're still here.
Yes.
So we get to 2 a.m. rolls around and her husband tries to contact Jill, but there's no answer. By 4 a.m., and I can't imagine what he was thinking at this point, not having heard from her at all, he's beyond worried. So he goes out in the streets of Brunswick and starts looking for her. Mm. When he doesn't hear anything by 6 a.m., he reports her as missing. I don't even know how to describe how anxious I would be by that point.
Yeah, yeah. Good on him for not doing that thing where people are like, you have to wait 12 hours or 24 hours. That happens so often. I'm like, that's a lie. It's not real.
Yeah, well, I have to admit, I thought that was true up until very recently. So I'm glad that he went straight away. But unfortunately, it wouldn't make a difference to the outcome. So initially, after she was reported missing, because like I just said before, everyone suspects the husband, obviously. So the police went straight in on him. I feel really bad for him because they went through like his apartment, all of his electronics, his car. They were trying to find anything on him to pin it on him, basically.
I hate it when they do that.
But I mean, I guess statistically, it's usually someone who's close when people go missing. So I get it, but also...
I just want to constantly hold a big sign that just says, follow the evidence, not the suspect.
Right. I mean, I get it. The police are trying to cut down on their work. They're like, well, usually it's the closest person, so we'll just go there first.
Hmm.
But it, as evident in this case, not always the case. So yeah, they couldn't find anything on him, so he was cleared as a person of interest. So they should, really.
Good.
So from there, the police reviewed CCTV footage. Yes, it's too many letters. They reviewed CCTV footage from businesses on Sydney Road, and they did find footage of her.
Oh.
So I think that was like a really lucky break for the case for them. So she was seen walking down Sydney Road, and she was on her phone when a man in a blue hoodie approached her and begins talking to her. If you look up the footage... she is not into this conversation at all.
Oh, no.
Can you, like, imagine yourself walking down the street late at night and a strange guy comes up to you and starts talking to you? I imagine most women in that position would probably act the same.
That happened to me just in, like, I was in a retail store and he worked there and he was just, like, too much. And I was like, I'm going to buy. Like, I can't. Yeah. No, thank you.
I totally get it. Like, she keeps trying to like keep a distance between her and the man. Like, she keeps trying to like trail behind him and create more distance.
Yeah.
But he keeps walking back to her. It's once you know what happens, it's really disturbing. But I get her reaction. She doesn't know this guy.
Yeah.
He's just like
fuck up politeness.
1:30 a.m. Yeah. No. No. Thank you.
I would much rather be on the naughty list in that situation. Fuck off.
Yeah. Well, we'll get to that a bit later. But she continues to walk in the general direction of her home, even though he's following her. But then obviously the CCTV footage runs out and you don't know what happens after that. So now it was like, who's the guy? Who's the guy in the blue hoodie? Because her husband doesn't recognize the guy at all.
Right. Yep. So he didn't recognize her. So it's not likely someone she knew.
Exactly. I have to admit, because I feel like a lot of true crime cases that you read, it's all like dodgy police work and police messing up and stuff. But I've got to give them really like a lot of credit here because they did such a good job in finding this guy. It's almost crazy that they found him because it would have been a needle in a haystack kind of situation.
That's great.
They did. So yeah, props to the police on this one. They actually did the right thing. So they started looking at her mobile phone history. And they found that her phone was pinging in Brunswick, so close to her home, up until about 4:30. After that, it began to move north. Which they deduced after the direction it was going that it was probably on the Tullamarine Freeway, which goes to the airport.
Yeah.
So they then pulled photographs of all the cars that went through the tollway, and then they ran the number plates.
All of them.
All of them, Jesus. Every single one of them. And I'm like, I don't know how long that would have taken them, but yeah. So they realized that a known sex offender had gone through it at around the same time her phone pinged in the area.
Okay. So they were like,
it's most likely probably this guy.
This is nice to hear like actual police work happening.
Yeah, exactly. Because I feel like you don't hear it very often.
Yeah.
Especially when you're talking about someone who's gone missing or had some other crime happen to them. Usually it's like, oh, police lost evidence or, you know, something like that. Whereas this time they actually went through and found the guy, which is crazy. So I'm about to tell you about the known sex offender. His name was Adrian Bailey. And I'm about to list his criminal history. And it's a lot. And lots of mentions of rape. So just another Jesus. Warning. So he was well known to police and he had... a criminal history starting from when he was 18. When he was 18, he was arrested and charged with the rape of a 17-year-old girl. He got bail.
What?
While he was on bail, 2 months later, he assaulted two women.
Oh, God. Okay.
Then he got bailed again.
Hold on. That doesn't seem to make sense. How do you... No, it's fine. Keep going. I'm just going to internally struggle with this for a minute.
Oh, no. Trust me. This is going to be like the next section is going to be a struggle to deal with. The month after that, he got arrested again and charged with attempted rape of a 16-year-old girl. She managed to escape his car before he could do anything else, but he was bailed again.
Okay, one, who keeps posting his bail?
Yeah, I don't know. but why is the court granting it in the first place is really beyond me.
I wonder if it goes through the same judge all the time or if it's different judges. Because if it's the same judge, that's worse.
I would think probably not the same one because we're talking about like inner city Melbourne. So I would imagine that's probably a bit busier. If it was like in a more rural area, I'd go, yeah, probably the same one. But probably not this close to the city, I wouldn't think.
Yeah.
So by the end of that year, he had assaulted another person and was finally sentenced to 5 years jail. Five years jail for the offences against three women.
Wow, that's fucking nothing.
Oh, it gets worse. Even though he was sentenced to 5 years, he only served 22 months.
What?
Before he was released. Yeah.
Not even 2 years? Oh, I hope this fucker gets hit by a car.
That'd be nice. So he was paroled after that. And he somehow managed to behave himself for that parole period, which I don't get.
That's the fucked up thing that gets me about parole is that like you just have to behave well in prison where there's not a lot to do. Like there's not a lot that you can do wrong. You just have to be a good prisoner compared to the other prisoners. And then that means that it's so flawed anyway.
Yeah, I definitely 100% agree. And I mean, clearly he got bailed multiple times when he kept doing the wrong thing. So the system clearly isn't strict enough to me reading that.
Yeah.
I mean, that was in the 90s. So I'd hope it's gotten better since then.
I think it has, at least a little bit.
We'll see that it didn't for him. So 10 years later, so now he's like 28. He ends up being arrested for 16 counts of rape. 16.
My brain hurts.
So he had five victims come forward to give evidence against him. And this time he does get a longer sentence. I will say that. But it was only 11 years.
That's not even a year per offense.
Yeah, exactly. Like that is not enough to me.
No.
Especially for a repeat offender.
Yeah, that's insane.
However, even though he had an 11-year sentence, he only served 8.
I hated how you looked at me just then when you went to say that.
I'm sorry. It's just, it's so bad. Like, I don't understand how.
That's an absolute failing.
Yeah.
Ugh.
So he gets released on parole in 2010, but ends up breaching it in August of 2011 when he gets arrested for bashing a man in a pub.
Right.
This part really gets me as well. I don't know why.
He's varying a little bit.
It's just a failure, like of the system. So he initially gets sentenced to 3 months jail for breaching his parole, not for the assault, just for breaching his parole. But then he appeals it, and just gets paroled again.
What?
So he doesn't.
No wonder
he
keeps reoffending. He's like, nothing happens to me anyway. It doesn't matter.
Exactly. So like, I might as well just keep going.
Oh God.
So. You're probably not counting at this point, but by 2012, when Jill goes missing, he's been charged for a total of 22 counts of rape.
Oh my God.
And he's out walking around in the public with no one really watching him.
That's when you need a microchip.
Yeah.
And you got to bury it like in behind their eye or something.
It's just, I don't understand how, especially for like someone who is clearly repeat offending and escalating. That they're just let go.
Yeah.
It's just such a failure of the system because him not being in jail directly led to Jill's disappearance. So
yeah.
So clearly, after I've told you all of that, you can see why the police would have been.
It was the husband. No.
No. That probably would have been easier for police, but no, that's not what happened. So they were obviously very interested in him as a suspect because he's done so many things. So they track him down and he gets interviewed for 10 hours by police. He remains in denial that he was involved in anything to do with it for the first 6 to 7 hours. I mean, that's a long time. I probably would have cracked before then.
I definitely would have cracked like instantly.
So he claimed for those 6 to 7 hours that the only thing he knew about Jill is what he'd seen in the media, because it was everywhere in the media. Because at this point she's just missing.
How long has she been gone by now?
So it hasn't been that long. It's only been 5 or 6 days.
Okay.
So that's honestly, yeah, I'm amazing police work to get a turnaround that quickly. But yeah, he's very like, oh no, I know nothing. I've just seen the news. I know nothing. While he's being interviewed, the police are searching his home.
Good.
And this is when they get their big break, because his girlfriend.
He had a girlfriend?
He had a girlfriend. How? I don't know.
Okay, this is something that that gets me and Laura all the time, is that like, how the fuck do these people, like, we understand the psychology of like the psychopaths that can put it on and like fake it and be really charming until they get what they need and manipulating and all that kind of stuff, but this dickhead does not sound like that.
No, he doesn't sound like he's capable of that kind of intelligence.
He just sounds lucky.
Yeah, no, I definitely think that that's the case. Did his girlfriend not know?
Did she not
care?
Did he
say he was in jail for something else? I mean, if she didn't care, that's worse.
I wonder how long he'd been out by then. Because maybe it was just like a recent thing and she had no idea.
He was still on parole.
I mean, people have entirely secret lives. I don't think we have ankle monitors and shit like that here, though.
No, I don't think we do either.
Mm.
But yeah, it was only 2 years after he was released.
Right. So it could have only been like a 3 months kind of thing.
Yeah, he could have just met her. I don't know the situation. Yeah. I didn't look into the girlfriend because, I mean, she's
not her fault. Oh, good. That's fine then.
So she let the police know that she found a SIM card in his washing and she didn't know where it had come from. And it turned out to be Jill's SIM card. So that provided, without a doubt, that he had some connection to her disappearance.
That's such a small thing to find as well. That's great.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was like the big break in the case. So after the police have basically said to him, we know you have her SIM card, he was like, okay, it was me.
Okay. So it didn't take much then.
No, it really didn't. So yeah, he cracked. He admitted to raping and killing Jill, and 6 days after she went missing, he led police to her body.
So was this his first like murder?
Yes, it was.
Okay, that's a big jump.
And I'll be honest, there's no real explanation as to why he made that jump.
Okay,
it just sort of seems like it just happened. I'm not sure it was a plan or anything. Still, obviously, clearly, he's an asshole. But. Yeah, I don't know if he really planned on murdering her or if it just happened.
Right, yeah.
So now at this point I can say what actually happened the evening that Jill disappeared. So shortly after about 1:30 in the morning, Adrian Bailey was walking north along Sydney Road and spotted Jill ahead of him. Jill was on the phone to her brother, who lived in Western Australia, and she seemed visibly upset. Apparently she was talking to her brother about her father's declining health. She had just been there to help her brother look after him. And so she was, he said that she was visibly upset. So this is when Adrian tries to approach her. And that's what we see on the CCTV footage. However, he said the reason that he decided to attack her was because she seemed friendly at first, but then got really hostile.
I wonder fucking why. Maybe it's because you're harassing a woman at 4:30 in the morning in the middle of the street.
Yeah, I mean,
dickhead.
I don't think any woman would feel safe alone that late at night and then have a stranger approach them. I would be like, I'd be standoffish as well, easily. Like,
yeah, I mean, I'm standoffish to people I like.
I mean, same sometimes, but Yeah, so apparently she basically told him to piss off, and that was the reason that he decided to attack
her. Oh, yeah, he was just going to have a conversation with her before that.
Exactly.
Trash like, pile.
Yeah, exactly. It's just the whole thing. He's a trash human being. Anyway. So when they got to the first laneway off Hope Street, he brutally attacks her, rapes her, and then strangles her to death. And then just leaves her body there for hours.
What?
And no one found her, which...
Because that's not that far.
I mean, I guess it's late. Yeah, it's late.
Yeah, it's like that weird dead witching hour of the morning kind of thing where there's just like nothing. Like even the bugs are asleep.
And that's the thing. Where she was killed is like half a block from the main street.
Jesus.
It's so close. How no one heard or seen anything kind of baffles me. But obviously no one did. So he just leaves her body there and goes home. He lived in Coburg at the time to get a shovel and his car. And then he goes back and puts her in the boot and drives about 40 minutes north and buries her in a shallow grave.
What a risk.
Yeah.
To just leave her there.
But no one's seen anything.
This man must have 45 rabbit's feet in his back pocket or something.
Or just like balls of steel. Like I don't
know. How many four leaf clovers has this dude found?
Well, I mean, he eventually got busted here, so obviously his luck ran out. but I think one of the saddest aspects of this one is that she was only 200 meters from her house. She was almost home.
So close.
It's just, yeah. It's so
She's
sad,
only 200 meters from her house.
Mm.
So was she already moved by the time the husband went out looking for her, or was she still there and he just missed her?
So I think that he went back at about 4:30. So her husband would have started looking before then.
Wow. So he would have just like...
Yeah. He probably would have walked past that alleyway.
And just not gone down it.
Mm.
That's a survival instinct though. Don't go down alleyways.
Yeah, absolutely. Don't do that. But the alleyway, I actually know the alleyway they're talking about. It's not really an alleyway. It's more like a half driveway.
Like
into,
a
like,
back
sort
entrance
of industrial...
sort of thing.
Yeah, because like right next to it is like a mechanic. So it's kind of like a half driveway going into the back of the mechanic.
Right. Okay.
So it's not like it's an alleyway that really goes anywhere that people
So there'd
would
be no reason
go.
To walk down it to get
exactly.
anywhere.
Right. Yeah. So... I can get why he might have not walked down there.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So, I mean, in a way, I'm like, I want to say it's good for the family that they found her so quickly, but obviously it's not because she was dead.
It's better than not having answers at all.
Exactly. So at least they did get an answer. They got her body and they were able to, you know, properly bury her and get some closure on it. But... This part, this is the end part, and it kind of makes me a bit angry.
Oh, God. I'm notorious for getting furious at things, so hit me.
Okay, so he was charged with murder, obviously, and was sentenced to life with a 35-year non-parole period.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that he got a non-parole period at all angers me beyond belief.
Yeah.
But if my math is right, that means he could apply for parole when he's 77.
Jesus. I always take that with a little bit of a grain of salt. Like, you can apply for... Then again, his track record is something to take into account. Yeah. But I think there's some... I feel like there's a legal rule somewhere that says that there is a minimum non-parole period, but they have to be given a chance if there's, like, a certain age or... something like that, or if it's like the first capital crime or something, which is fucking stupid. But his track record of getting parole every time he's asked for it is terrifying.
Yeah, exactly, which is why it scares me so much. So that means that in his lifetime, like 77, he's probably still going to be up and around and kicking.
Hopefully not.
Potentially be free again.
I do think that if they had, like, when they get paroled, if they get paroled and they're, like, elderly or whatever, they shouldn't be allowed to change their name.
Yeah, I think so, too. I mean, I don't think they should be allowed to anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
Especially if it's, like, a horrific murder like this one.
Yeah.
You shouldn't have the right to do that.
Wow. So he's in jail right now.
He is. They did change the laws after this case because obviously they looked at it and went, oh my God, he's been paroled so many times. he should not have been on the street.
Someone fucked up. Yeah.
So in the state of Victoria, they did change the law around approving parole. So I think it is really not likely that he'll be given it again.
Good.
Because someone has to, you know, manually review it. And I would think that if you looked at his history and looked at this case, why on earth would you say yes?
Yeah. Wow, that's insane. So yeah. he's 6 years into his sentence then.
Yeah.
Wow. Wait, 2012, did you say?
Anyway, 8 years.
Eight years. I thought it was 2014 for some reason. 2012. Oh, wow. That's insane. Good. He's got another, 20-something years to go?
Yeah. You know?
Jesus.
I feel kind of bad saying this, but also not at the same time. Hopefully he dies before then.
I was going to say, hopefully he gets shanked.
Yeah.
I mean, I did say before, I hope he gets hit by a car, but if he's in prison, I don't think that's going to happen. Hopefully there's a guy named Carr in prison.
Yeah, I mean, one can only hope. I mean, yeah, I have no sympathy for this guy. He's a trash human being.
That's insane.
Yeah.
And so that's the area that you lived in when you first sort of moved.
Yeah, so I lived in Brunswick. I definitely know exactly the places they're talking about.
Jesus.
Which was kind of wild for me when I was researching this. I was like, oh, definitely walk past there.
Yeah, it's really eerie. That's like for the Claremont serial killer case. I was like, I've been there. I've driven past this thing. It's really insane. And you get really deeply into it as well. Wow, that was insane. That was a good story. Horrible events, but good story.
Yeah, it's definitely like interesting to see how people like this get handled in the justice system.
Yeah, and it's good they made some changes towards the end as well, like in terms of the parole. Yeah,
I don't think
review.
It's perfect at this point, but obviously it can only get better with time. Or hopefully, I shouldn't say that, I just jinxed it.
Shit.
But I mean, hopefully it just gets better with time, because I definitely read stories all the time where people have been paroled when they shouldn't have been.
Ugh, God,
I think it is changing for the better for sure.
It's all bad. So my story doesn't have anything to do with parole, but it does have a lot of things to do about being angry. As in, like, it'll make you angry because it's really pointless. So I'm doing The Devils of Dayton. So if you've been listening to the other Christmas episodes, you'll know that I do the Christmas theme one. So I'm going to preface this with the note that the story has a lot of conflicting information that I found. There are some basic details that were just across the board, but some others that are only in one or two places. So I sort of didn't include them because I wasn't 100% sure. The crimes are so senseless and they're in such kind of a weird sort of local pocket, in the US that I couldn't actually find much other than the Dayton Daily newspaper to go off. So there was couple of things on Wikipedia, on Murderpedia. There was two or three sort of as it was happening, and then 10, 20 years later sort of reviews from the Dayton Daily. There's one thing in the New York Times, but there wasn't a lot that was this, then this happened kind of thing. That was all the same. So they all, even Dayton Daily News had some things in one story and not in another. So, yeah, it really annoyed me. So it's kind of pieced together. This is The Devils of Dayton. Christmas Eve, 1992, a group of four teenagers who, in air quotes, this is something that they actually said, wanted more drama in their lives.
Okay.
Yep. Decided to go on a Christmas adventure of murder, mayhem, and destruction.
I can't say that was something that I was doing as a teenager.
No, I mean the mayhem bit, sure.
Sure, yeah, but like the drama, the other bits. Sure. Not the murder part.
Yeah, yeah. So the leader of the group, Marvelous Keen, was 19 years old at the time of the spree. Up until the year before, Marvelous was actually classified as a good kid. He was a good student, decent grades, never been arrested, no criminal history. 1991, his brother was killed while committing a robbery, and that changed him. He became depressed, withdrawn, and essentially gave up on his education and, it seemed, his entire future.
Who wouldn't after something like that?
Yeah, well, I mean, some people take it and sort of try and change the story, change the narrative a little bit, you know, try and maybe work towards being better and I don't know. Anyway.
Zag on in the other direction, I'm assuming.
Yes, he very much went down a cliff. I'm not going to say downhill because this is just something else.
Worse than that.
So Keane actually moved away from Dayton to California with his dad, but came back mid-1992 after there were financial issues in the home. Following a trend, he then left his mother's in Dayton in December, again about financial issues. And he found himself in a halfway home in downtown Dayton. And everywhere I read, they kept calling it a flop house, but I can't in good conscience call it that because it sounds
What
ridiculous.
is a flop house?
I think it's like a shared apartment with just like people everywhere.
Okay. It just sounds really mean.
It sounds ridiculous. So I call it a halfway house because I don't know what the fuck a flop house is, but I hate it.
I get that.
Without a job, a real home, or family support, Marvelous Keane and his, again, air quotes, friends, came up with an idea on how to get cash for Christmas.
Okay.
His friends were his girlfriend Taylor, who was 16, DeMarcus Smith, who was 17, and Smith's girlfriend Heather Matthews, who was 20. They planned on robbing Joseph Wilkerson. So he was 34 and an acquaintance of Keane's girlfriend Taylor. They lured Wilkerson into their trap. On the 24th of December, by promising group sex with the two girls, which one of them's 16,
That's so illegal. What
the
the
other's
fuck?
20, and this dude's 34. So, like, I'm not saying, like, just don't do things. After a drink, Wilkerson and Taylor went to the bedroom, a brief wait, and then Keane and Matthews followed them. Wilkerson began to take his clothes off. Taylor and Matthews pretended to do the same. Keane then began to remove his own pants, but pulled them back up and drew a gun. He ordered Wilkerson onto the bed, then got Taylor and Matthews to tie Wilkerson's hands to the bed and search the house. Wilkerson told Keane that he had a gun in the garage. After fetching it, Keane covered him in blankets and shot him in the chest with it. Taylor and Matthews returned to the bedroom and found Wilkerson shaking and dying. Taylor, which is Marvelous's girlfriend, was given Wilkinson's gun, but it jammed. Keane then gave his girlfriend his own gun, and she shot Wilkinson in the head.
There's just so many levels of fucked up.
Yep, and their loot from the robbery was a microwave oven, a small TV, a phone, a curling iron and blow dryer, and then Wilkinson's car.
I mean, the only item that's really worth it there is the car, but I'm assuming they wouldn't be able to keep it because it's stolen.
Right. And these are a bunch of teenagers. Like, what are you going to do with it?
Yeah, exactly.
So later that same day, so this is Christmas Eve, while walking along the street, they came across 18-year-old mother, Danita. I'm going to say Gillette, but I don't know if that's right. It's Gullette.
That's how I would
Gullet?
pronounce it, but
Gillette? Yeah, I'm not sure. But she was making a phone call in a phone booth. You remember phone booths?
oh, how old-fashioned.
was 1992. Keane approached the booth, pointed a gun at her face, and said, "Merry Christmas, bitch." They took her coat and her shoes and then fired 9 rounds into her while she sat in the booth begging for her life. In her pocket, she had all of 50 cents.
50 cents.
She had 50 cents in her pockets, and they took her shoes and her coat. That was it.
That's making me wonder, like, is this really about the stuff?
I don't fucking think so because I don't get much out of it.
Exactly. So if like you're already onto your second and you're not getting anything, why would you keep going?
Yeah, it's just, well, they want a drama in their lives,
Oh my
remember?
God. Couldn't they just like start a rumor or something like everyone else in high school?
Start a rumor. Yeah. Go do drugs or something else. Don't do this.
Exactly.
Oh man. The third victim of theirs was on Christmas Eve. Sorry, the third victim. I can't read my own writing. I really can't. I just can't read in general. Okay. The third victim of theirs on Christmas Eve was the ex-boyfriend of Heather Matthews. His name was Jeffrey Wright, who also lived at, again, they called it a flop house. The halfway house is what I'm going to call it. He was shot 4 times in the legs by DeMarcus Smith, Heather's current boyfriend, but amazingly, Wright survived. He also wasn't robbed. So this is just carnage for the sake of carnage now.
So I was kind of right in my theory that it's really not about what they're getting out of it.
No. Christmas morning, Laura Taylor, which is Marvelous Keane's girlfriend, robbed and killed with a bullet to the head her own ex-boyfriend, Richmond Maddox. This is where I saw some conflicting information. I saw some stuff saying that they put him in his car. And then drove it into a tree and then just walked away from it, is one report. And then there's another report that he was shot in the head, but the car was left near a hospital. And then there was another one that said it was just at his house. Like, there was so much. So I have no idea what actually happened to him, and I could not find it.
The thing we do know is that he was killed.
He's dead. Okay. Yeah. That's about as much as we got. Then Kane and Smith stole a Dodge Shadow at a fuel stop. So they just went and they held a person up at gunpoint, stole the car, took off.
I wonder why they didn't kill that person, since they're just, you know, killing willy-nilly at this point.
Yeah, exactly. So Boxing Day, which I found out recently, is not called Boxing Day in the US. It's just the 26th of December.
Yeah, I think Boxing Day is just here in the UK, I'm pretty sure.
I don't know. But anyway, it was weird for me because they were like, the December 26th, the day after Christmas. And I was like, you mean Boxing Day?
Boxing
like,
Day. That's what that's called.
Yeah. Yeah. Now they called themselves their own little gang, robbed a mini-mart. They killed the attendant, Sarah Abraham, who was 38, after she gave them all the money from the till. They also shot at two Samaritans in the mini-mart but didn't kill or injure them. They got $44 from the till.
Oh, my God. Yeah. My other question is, how are they continuing to get away with this? Isn't someone noticing all these dead people?
Well, okay, hold on.
I'm getting ahead
of me, sorry. Now, the next actions they took were in order to cover their tracks, according to police. Two people the group knew from the halfway home, Marvin Washington, who was 19, and Wendy Cottrell, who was 16, had both witnessed the attack on Jeffrey Wright, and it's thought they were worried that they would talk to the police. And that they would tell on them, essentially. They took them to a gravel pit and shot them. And afterwards, after they had killed them, they took Cottrell's shoes.
How can you be that desperate like for it's shoes just, at this point?
It's just so petty and senseless. So they were driving around in the Dodge, which had been reported and stolen the day before. And a police sergeant pulled the vehicle over, thinking he was arresting, you know, joyriders on the holidays, whatever. Bunch of drunk teenagers, but instead he found several guns and bloody clothes in the vehicle. Now, police hadn't yet found the first or the last two victims, and the others weren't linked because Dayton was kind of the place where this shit just didn't happen. Like, they barely had any crime. And they'd had a gas station robbery where someone had died. They'd had in a lower sort of halfway section downtown area, somebody had been shot. They hadn't found the first guy. And then there was somebody else. Because it's just so random. Like, there's
no obvious pattern to it.
Yeah, and, like, the woman... I'm so sorry. I've forgotten her name. Danita. In the phone booth, she was just just somebody that they walked past. Like, there wasn't a connection to be made, you know?
Yeah.
So they hadn't linked it all together. Eventually, they would string together the rampage of the four bored and ruthless teenagers. And when they were pulled over in the vehicle, they immediately put their hands up, no fight. Just surrendered straight up. Didn't try and deny anything, didn't say anything. I have no idea. There isn't one. That's kind of the issue with this. The four were charged, with two of them being under 18. They were spared from any, like, major, like, death penalty or anything like that. Yeah. Heather Matthews, who was 20, she cut a deal to agree to testify so that they wouldn't go for the death penalty. But Marvelous Keane was prosecuted to the full extent of the law. There's a lot of stuff that I saw as well, but again, there was, like, bits and pieces everywhere else of Marvelous not really fighting anything. Like, he just completely given up. He didn't give a shit what happened. He didn't go for parole. He didn't go for, like, appeals. He didn't try a stay of execution, any of that kind of shit.
Makes you kind of curious as to why. You would think that he was only 20, right?
Yeah. He was 19 at the time he was arrested.
You would think at that point that you'd be keen to not, you know, die.
Yeah, I know. I'm just going to bring it up quickly because I thought I wrote it down, but I didn't. So Marvelous was sentenced to death. He was executed on July 21st, 2009. The others are still in prison, unlikely to ever get out. They won't be eligible for parole until they're like, until 25 years. So until they're like 45, which I think is past now.
Oh, so they're just,
I think they are eligible for parole, but they're not likely to get it.
You know, the way it should be.
Because this always really interests me. Murderpedia actually has his final meal and his last words.
Oh, okay.
On there as well. So final meals always intrigue me because I'm like, I wonder what the fuck I would pick.
Yeah, I don't know either, actually. It'd be a really hard decision.
Yeah. And also, I thought, or maybe they didn't then. Oh, it was 2009. But I thought that they had like a limit of how much they could spend. Like, I didn't think you could order, like, you know, that really expensive sundae that has, like, gold lease on it. It's, like, $25,000 or something stupid. You can't have that.
Like, caviar but I think, or something else that's, like, really expensive.
Yeah, I think there's a limit of what you can actually spend. I don't know. But Marvelous Keane's final meal was a porterhouse steak with A1 sauce, which I don't know what that is. A pound of jumbo fried shrimp with cocktail sauce.
Nice.
A pound.
I mean, if you're going anyway... Why not eat as much as you possibly can?
Yeah. French fries and onion rings with ketchup. Dinner rolls with butter. Two plums.
Random.
A mango. A pound of seedless white grapes.
So he liked his fruit, okay.
German chocolate cake. Two bottles of Pepsi and two bottles of A&W cream soda.
I would definitely vomit after all of that.
You would? Yeah, like...
That is a lot of food.
That's so much. I wonder if... I don't actually know, but I wonder if he finished it.
I'm kind of curious and I hate that I'm curious. Because, yeah, that is a mountain of food. I don't think I could eat that. And I can eat a lot, but I don't think I could do that.
Yeah. Yeah. So Marvelous Keane was executed on the 21st of July, 2009. The others are still in prison, unlikely to ever get out. They're actually serving prison sentences in excess of 100 years.
Wow, okay.
So they got a shit ton of time because of just how ridiculous it was. He was killed by lethal injection, and when asked if he had any final words, he said, "I have no words."
So edgy.
So, like, teenage vampire or some shit. And that is the story of the Devils of Dayton, the town's most senseless, horrible, and pointless crime spree committed by guideless teens for some petty cash and drama.
I mean...
What a fucking Christmas, Dayton. Jesus. Yeah.
As you were telling it, I'm like, this is definitely the act of teenagers because it's just so stupid.
Yeah, there's no pattern, there's no logic, there's no thinking, there's not even like rage.
No, there's nothing.
There's no drive, there's nothing there. It's just because they could. It was so fucking weird.
I struggle to relate. I have been a teenager, but there was no point in my teenage years where I was like, yeah, let's go kill someone. So I'm like, why? Like, why would you think that that's a good idea?
I wish I had, like, more of a proper thing to dive into to look at what happened and why it happened. If there's, like, a book or something that I maybe didn't see, like, I definitely probably could have sunk more time into it. But there's just, it's just so confusing of like, what the fuck?
Yeah, definitely. I totally get that. I think the thing I'm most curious about is I would love to know, which probably isn't available to the public because it wasn't that long ago. I would love to know what they said in court.
Yeah.
Like what their reasoning was. I mean,
surely there's a court transcript or something like that somewhere.
I would just love to know what their excuse was because surely they would have had to have given some kind of statement about what happened.
Yeah, for sure. I'd love to see their initial police statements.
That'd be good. I doubt it's so recent. I doubt that kind of stuff would be available, but
there are some court documents, Keane v. Mitchell from 2008, but there's just so much. And there's lots of like, I did try and look at it to try and get a better understanding of what happened to like specific things that I didn't have a lot of details on. But a lot of it is like, citations of other court documents.
Oh, well, yeah, that's not gonna work.
And I was like, this is a rabbit hole I am not prepared for.
Yeah.
But there's just so much, and like the pictures of, there's just so much, there's so many photos of them, and like just it just breaks my brain with like the ridiculousness of it.
Because, like, I mean, it's not an excuse, but I almost understand if you were desperate for money or something. Like, that would at least make some kind of sense.
Yeah, the thing that gets me is that, yeah, there's no, like, it's not an excuse, but, like, there's usually cause and effect, right?
Yeah, exactly.
This is just an effect. Like, there's no start of that. Do you know what I mean?
It's such an extreme reaction to nothing that is so confusing to me.
It's just, I don't know. Man, I just wish there was more that I had on that. But that is probably, it's just very confusing. Most of my stories are usually infuriating because something's gone wrong and, like, it hasn't been able to been caught or whatever like that. But this is just a lot of question marks of what the fuck.
Yeah, definitely. Just no, there's no logic here. There's nothing.
No.
Yeah, I think that's what's getting me. I can't. My brain's having trouble trying to understand why that would have even happened in the first place.
Yeah, I just want to know what sort of trigger there was, or just it's gonna drive me nuts. Anyway,
it's obviously though that one of them had influence over the others.
Oh yeah, well, Kane was definitely like the ringleader, and then his girlfriend was also like enthralled with him or whatever the fuck that was, and then the other two were just kind of there and then got roped into it and, you know, just didn't give a shit one way or another, so they went along with it. But I don't know how you can sit around in a group of four people and one of them goes, we should rob and kill people. And then the rest of them are like, huh, yeah, okay, sounds like a good weekend.
Yeah, like, it doesn't make any sense. Can you imagine being, like, in high school and one of your friends are like, hey, like, just before Christmas, let's go on a murder spree.
Yeah, what do you guys, what are your Christmas plans? You want to go and just kill a bunch of people? Yeah, let's do like... that. It's ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous. Oh, anyway, that was that story. I'm sorry. Sorry, not sorry.
It's just going to break my brain for the rest of the day. It's fine.
You're welcome. Do you have anything you want to plug?
I guess I probably should do that, shouldn't I?
Yes.
So I co-host two podcasts. The first one is Fuck Me Dead, which we kind of just make fun of Australian news because why not? And the second one is The Devil's Margarita, which is a true crime podcast. And that kind of came about because I couldn't stop talking about true crime on my other one, which wasn't about true crime. So I needed an outlet. So yeah, that's probably the two things that I have to plug.
That's great. So do you have websites for them or is it just socials?
Socials are probably the best place, but I really should have written down websites beforehand, but I didn't.
That's fine. You can send them to me. Links for both of those and anything else you want to plug will be in the show notes. And go check out those podcasts. And while you're there, go to all of our Instagrams and interact with us. Say hi. You know, Dead Obsessed has a Facebook group. We have a Linktree with all sorts of stuff. And if you have your own city story, hit us up. Get onto our Instagram, click the link, and then submit your city story there. Or you can just email it at deadobsessed@gmail.com. But thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you for having me. This was fun.
And this is a Merry Christmas from us. Laura's not here. Hope you all have a fabulous, safe and happy holidays and don't go around killing people for no apparent reason.
Yeah, don't do that.
Don't do that. All right. Thanks, everyone. We will see you. I always say we'll see you next time, but it sounds weird. Thanks for listening. Bye.
Bye.
You know what I wanted to do? I wanted to do JonBenet Ramsey so bad, but I just did not have the time. I was like, no, I need to do that fucking case justice, like... It's like the most famous Christmas case ever, and I could not bring myself to do it because I need to dedicate more time to it.
There's a lot in there.
There's just so much, and it's so insane, and everybody knows about it as well. So that's one of the reasons I did not do JonBenet, although I started it. I started this story that I just did, and then I went, I gotta look at it. And so I started a second story, which was JonBenet. And then I was like, I can't do it. I need more time and I need like just an entire library.
The whole thing is so confusing on that one.
Yeah, the whole thing's fucked. It's all fucked. This is Dead Obsessed.